Who, Liverpool?
Liverpool,
honestly,
yeah.
I think this is their season. They can play as crap as they like and they're still winning.
Miles has got it, it's a pretty confirmed.
Oh, there's a special card. What, you have to ask permission to go to the toilet?
I got one that works.
You need a staff card.
Oh, you need a staff one?
Yeah.
That one's clear.
Only staff want to go to the toilet.
Wow.
That's a mad one.
They're going to hold it down.
George, you're the only one in good spirits today, huh?
Yeah, I know.
Oh, you're not one, isn't it?
Only lucky.
Yeah, are you happy about that, though?
No. Are you, like, really? I didn't see the whole 90 minutes, obviously, but it's poor.
Sounded a bit mad still.
It's poor. It's poor, George.
The defending's still quite bad as well.
The who?
The defending is awful. Shocking, bro. It's shocking.
Like, you got Callum Chambers back now, surely. You...
Callum Chambers is your best defender. As the sub that comes on, you know his peak. Do you know what I mean?
You're not riding for Socrates no more, no?
I said he's a good defender, no more. I never gassed him up.
You still think he's good?
I think he's a good defender. I don't think he's anything special. I don't think he's top shelf, not a good defender, bruv.
I'm telling you, he's not. I'm telling you, bro.
I think he's pretty standard.
He is not a good defender. From when Callum Chambers come on the field and look better than you, you ain't good.
Yeah, but equally, I can show you games where he's look better than Callum Chambers. Yeah, I'm not saying that's not hard, bro. I'm just saying.
Bruv, I look at that. What's that centre back at Villa? The one on the ones who are playing next to Mings. Mings and Eggles.
Yes.
Is it Eggles, yeah?
Yes.
I look at Eggles and he looks better than Socrates. Jeez. He looks better than Socrates, bro.
I've seen him twice. Maybe he is. We don't have a really good centre back.
We don't have a good one. Forget really good.
I think he's good. I think he's a.
If it's right,
6 out of 10 defender.
Put it like this, yeah?
Wait, hold on a minute. Your bar for a good defender is 6 out of 10.
Good. And if you're very good, you're 7 or 8. And if you're excellent, you're 9 or 10.
Put it like this, yeah? And I'm Man United fan. I think Maguire is just about a good defender.
Yeah.
Just about a good defender, bruv. So for you to tell me Socrates is a good defender, you're having a laugh.
Socrates is a hatchet, man.
You're having a laugh.
Just bigger, powerful.
He is not good.
I'm not saying he's great.
He's
not good enough for us.
He's actually quite bad.
He's the defending equivalent of Crappie, which is most wing players who are just very quick but not very good at all.
Yeah, exactly that. Basically.
Okay, if you were to rank him, or rank all the centre backs in the Premier League,
he'd be in the top half of those centre backs.
What? Would he?
Of course he would.
No, he wouldn't. No, I don't think he would. That's
defenders at Southampton are better than him.
Bruv.
Best of guys better than him.
Who? Best of guys better than him.
Wow, see, now you're just being harsh.
Bruv. Lewis Dunk is better than him.
Yeah, Lewis Dunk.
I think they're on par.
Nah.
I think they're both just good.
Nah.
I've got to be honest.
Gary Cahill?
The one worst defender good. In the Premier League, and his name's David Luiz, and you signed him.
Johnny Evans is better than
him. Good. I think those are just all good defenders for me. They're all 6 out of 10.
Nah, but he's on the lower end. He's on the lower end.
Johnny Evans is not good.
He's on the
Johnny
lower
Evans
end.
Johnny Evans is not good. He's decent.
Alright, semantics now. Good, decent, you know what I mean? I'm not saying that
between decent and good. Decent is solid 5. Good is a 7.
No. See, that's where you're thinking your lot's bar is low.
Nah.
7 is like, that's for me, okay, you're a proper defender. If you're in the 8s and 9s, you're bordering on world class. If not world class. So 7 for me, you're very good. So I'll give you a 7 for me. 7 for me is a very good defender.
Nah, it's not. It's a good defender.
Not for me. Who's a 7 then?
I'm trying to think of a 7.
It's a good defender.
Who would I call a 7?
Like, see if he was rating the performance, yeah?
Yeah.
Alright, Rudiger's a 7. I think Rudiger's a 7.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Right, and
but Socrates he's good.
He's one level below him.
No, he's not. Maguire, I would say, is one level below him. Maguire, I'll give a 6. Maguire,
I don't know. Maybe you're seeing something we're not, George.
Don't try and frame like I'm
because he's his player.
I'm not saying he's anything great. I'm just saying he's good.
He's not good, bro.
I.e. decent.
Nah. Good is not decent either. Don't do that.
Who's
Socrates?
Huh?
Socrates. He's not good, bro.
He's good, George.
You see now you framed it. He's not going to get the context.
All right, no.
Jude,
you framed as if I'm saying that he's the arse stopper in the Premier League.
No, I didn't.
I'm not saying he's anything.
Where did I say that?
No, but the way you say it, that he comes in the room, that makes it sound like I'm trying to gas up Socrates.
I'm trying to tell you that
Premier League winning answer to us.
You think he's a seven?
No, I said six. I said six. He's a 6 out of 10 Premier League defender.
No, it's not, bruv.
Okay,
maybe five.
No, it's not.
All right, five then. But you know, I'm a
he's
massive.
I've been thinking since the last time I saw you. Yeah, you were like Tammy Abraham shit. Yeah. What are you saying about Tammy? I thought about it a long time. Yeah, I was thinking about it a long time, and I thought, does Jordan actually know anything about
football? So you think he is good?
I think he's not a bad player. I'm not saying he's brilliant.
He
I need to see more. Right. But I remember when he was playing at Swansea, I saw him play against Spurs for Swansea, and I thought he was decent.
Yeah.
His hold up play was good, and his all round game was good, and I thought, yeah, he looks quite sharp. He needs to grow a bit.
As G said last week, you know, maybe I went a little bit too hard on him. However, I'm still not having him.
Jordan, this is what I'm saying. I don't understand your idea.
Not just Tammy.
I know you've got a long running thing about Son as well. You're always like sniggering about Son, like Son shit. You know what I mean? Son is overrated. You say he's overrated.
No, the conversation was, I believe it was, is he one of the 7 best players in the league to be a candidate for PFA Player of the Year? That was the conversation. I named you about 15 ahead of him at the time.
Even the last pod, I remember you saying something like, you said Son, and there was a little laugh in there. The point is, I don't understand, Jord, is then when it comes down to you talking about players, I hear you talking about people like Socrates. Do you remember way back when he was going on about fucking Koscielny being the top centre-half in the Premier League. Where is Koscielny now?
I never ever said he's the top centre-back in the Premier
you
League.
Said
I he, never said that.
I'm sure you George. Said. Th- I'm been, sure the been, argument George, was.
Let's say he's the best. But a top defender in the Premier League.
I said that. I did say that. I'll hold that L. No, he's dead. He's dead now.
He was always dead.
He's dead. I never said Son was shit, and I never said Koscielny was the top defender.
Nah, but George, no, what's mad what you said about Tammy? You said lower half of championship, bro.
Yeah.
That was crazy.
I've conceded that.
He scored 26 goals.
Hard on him, I'm still not having him.
But George, what are you not having him on the basis of?
Yeah. I think this is form he's on. He's scored some good goals, and since he's been scoring goals, I've even bigged him up. I've bigged him up, so I've been fair. But I just look at myself, is he the guy that's going to score 15 goals plus regularly every season?
What is it you don't like about him? What is it that he's not doing?
I don't think his hold-up play is particularly great for the size of him. I think it's okay. It's better than maybe I give him credit for, but I don't think it's particularly great. I think it's layoff play. Yesterday, he was shit. He was shit yesterday.
But no one mentioned that
because he's got 3 weeks in the bank of good credit. But he was shit yesterday.
But the thing is,
and the chance he missed, all right, he's young, but he should score that chance.
No, he should, 100%.
He should score that. But then it's not like Aguero never misses a chance.
No, but he's got 5 years credit in the bank.
No, come on, you can't do that.
Why not?
You can't do that. Every striker misses chances.
Of course.
Every striker misses. I don't think he played well yesterday. It's because he kept making certain runs and getting into positions to score. Like, there was a couple of times when the ball got whipped in and a defender just nicked it off his head or nicked it off his foot.
Okay.
So as a striker, he's very intelligent in the way he moves and positions himself to score goals.
Yeah. And it's opening up play for others as well.
Okay, so what I have said a couple of weeks ago is that
he's going to score
scoring some good goals, and I'll keep my mouth shut. I won't blast him anymore. But I'm not going to change my mind about five goals. What I'm saying is, I said last week,
you seem very harsh in your criticism, and there's now no basis. Everything that you've said that he can't do, you said he can't finish, He showed that he can finish. Zeke can't hold up.
He scored two or three good goals.
He scored 7 goals.
You said yourself, not all of them have been good goals.
No, not all of them have been good goals.
So I'm saying two or three of those goals have been good finishes.
The other half have been.
World Cup was shit. He still won the Golden Boot.
But that's different.
Don't have to be good.
Harry Kane has got pedigree that we know he can bang, he can finish. Abraham hasn't got that pedigree.
Jordan, if you say a striker can't finish it, and then they've like scored 19 goals before in a season. Scored 26 goals in a season.
In a lower league.
I'm talking about finishing because it doesn't matter what league you're in.
But it kind of does.
We're talking about finishing, right? And then come to the Premier League and has scored 7.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I think you need to take a step back and say, I don't know, right? Maybe this guy can finish.
I think it's relevant what league he was in.
I told you why it's relevant, yeah? Because one of the things that points that you made, you said he scored 5 goals at Swansea. Right, and I remember that comment because I looked at it and I thought, who was Swansea's top scorer that season?
Mm-hmm.
And it was IU on 7.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that tells you a little bit more about Swansea. If you look at his
record,
he scored goals wherever he's been. He's been either the top scorer at the club or one of the top scorers at the club throughout his whole career, even at youth level. Mm-hmm. I think you're mad.
So do you rate him? Just so I'm clear,
I don't rate him. I don't think he's a superstar. I think he's looking like a decent striker who can become a good striker.
Okay. I'm not there yet. But I have ruled back on he's a lower half of the Championship striker. That was maybe a bit
lower half of the Championship.
I know I'm trashing my own club when I say this, but we signed Alvaro Morata. Tammy Abraham costs nothing and he's been more effective.
He's better than that guy, bro. Hands down.
Well, that's not hard, is it? I mean,
he's better than the hands down.
Striker. But that doesn't matter, does it? If you can't score,
Can you see how he's keeping Giroud at the team? Because I can see that.
Yeah.
Can you see why
he's keeping Giroud at the team? Because I think that's clear.
I think there's probably an element of Lampard. Fan. I think there's an element of Lampard thinking you could be my guy for the next 2 or 3 years, so I might as well invest in you now and give you the confidence.
But you don't see what he gives
now
to the team.
Giroud could be gone next year.
You don't see what he gives the team now in terms of like his ability to run in behind. And
I see that.
Because Giroud can hold up the ball better than Tammy.
Yeah, he's linked
up. But everything else.
And it's a risk as well. Come on, man. If you're Lampard, right, the easy option would be, you know what? It's my first season. I ain't taking no risks. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm putting in Giroud. And I know Giroud's going to, he ain't going to be the best player, but I know he's going to
do a job.
He could do me a job. I can't take a risk on Tammy at the moment because I need someone to bang goals. You know what I mean? You're not going to do that unless you've got serious, you know, you've got serious belief in the guy. You know what I mean?
It's not personal. I've got nothing against Tammy Abraham. If he scores 20 goals this year, he's a South
London player. No one's saying it. Not personal against him.
No one's saying it's personal with you, Jordan. Okay. It's just that you set your face against some players, and it's just like, that shit.
It doesn't want to come back.
You don't like to back down, that's what it is.
No, I just said, if he does the job over the course of the season, I will come on in and concede that I was completely wrong. But after 5 or 6 goals, no. I'm surprised if anyone does do it after 5 or 6 goals. Why would you do that?
No, because you said lower half for the Championship. Because someone from the lower half of the Championship is not going to get that record. So, yeah, you do have to concede you got it wrong.
Jordan, is that one of your full starts? Have we done a full start?
We have done a full start.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, this is the Football Fans Podcast.
And that was Tammy Watch. See you for next week's edition.
He is really
mad. Better hope you don't score 15, man.
I know. It's not a good look. It's the Football Fans Podcast with myself, Jordan, here alongside our Spurs fan, Ollie.
Yes. What are you saying, Jordan?
I'm good, man. I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, well, it's hurting. I'm hurting, man. It's good. And the other thing I got to remind you of, right? Not just you, but G as well. Remember a couple of years ago, when I was talking about Dele Alli?
You guys were running me like, Ollie's got a problem, man.
Ollie's got a problem. What's wrong with him and Alli? I've been proved right. Move on.
We'll get to him later on. We've also got here Josh, our United fan. Josh, what are you saying?
Boy, I'm on holiday this season. Get me.
It's a wrap.
I'm on holiday.
It's a write-off.
Chilling, watching other teams.
Watching Serie A and La Liga and them kind of things.
Yeah.
Forget United.
What about that?
I'm loving your lost demise. And we've also got a Chelsea fan, GG. You good?
Yeah, man. Just, you know, focus on the Champions League for this year. Premier League seems a little bit out of reach at the moment. So.
Man said Champions League.
Didn't you lose your first game?
Don't worry, there's still five more. We should still win the group.
Are you going to make Europa?
Listen, I said to the guys when I was on there a couple of weeks ago, every time Valencia have been in our group stage, we've got to the final. So this is, you know, could be our year again.
Right. Wow, big talk. Okay, we'll come back to that. Right, guys, we've got a lot to get through in this show today. Let's start off, guys. Let's get straight into it. Before we get straight into it, let's shout out to the listeners. Subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. We're on iTunes, Spotify, and also across all the socials, Twitter, Football Fans Pod, and Instagram and Facebook, Football Fans Podcast. Right, let's talk about money and youth players, guys. I want to ask, I'll start with you, Josh. If you think that whether, you know, because of the crazy inflated prices that have been paid for players now over the last 3 or 4 years, and some of the quoted prices for some of the top talent across Europe, it's got to a point now where even the top teams now can't continuously lay out 100 million plus on any one player. Mm-hmm. And if there's a kind of correlation with Chelsea aside, because they kind of have to play young players, but everybody else playing younger players, and how much that could be of a benefit to younger players, especially in the Premier League?
I think, well, obviously we're getting to the point. I always thought that, like, the inflation in transfer prices was obviously going to get to a point where it's going to become unsustainable.
Mm.
And I think we're already kind of getting to that point where, you know, obviously I'm a United fan, we just spent £80 million on a centre-back who is...
£40 million centre-back.
I don't even think he's a £40 million centre-back. Okay. So, and, you know, you're getting to the point where we've just gone through a summer where quite a lot of clubs haven't really significantly improved their squads in terms of outlay of money. United haven't really. Arsenal, I mean, they didn't really spend a lot of money, and the one kind of splurge they did was, again, overpriced player, in my opinion. City needed a centre-back, didn't get one because they didn't want to pay a certain money in the market. So I think we're going to get to the stage now where there's going to be a bit of an arms race for younger players, because what you're seeing is the way to make big money is to get a really young prospect in. Like, teams like Dortmund, teams like Benfica have been doing this for a little while, and mm-hmm. people are going to start clocking on. Like, mm-hmm. what you need to do is get a young player, develop him, and sell him before he's even 21 for 100 mil.
Mm.
And you're making bucks. So I think
it's a difference, not though, with those kind of clubs. They will invariably win their league, so they can afford to let go of their top talent. Whereas teams in maybe in the Premier League, where there's expectations on the bigger teams, they can't do that.
No, so I think, like, obviously you're still gonna have to like buy like superstars if you're trying to win Premier Leagues and Champions Leagues, right? But what I think is gonna happen, and it's already kind of happening, is that there's a bit of an arm race going on now for the best 16-year-old, best 17-year-old before they've broken into the first team. Like, United just spent the world record for a 16-year-old from a guy from Monaco this summer. And other clubs have been doing it. City have been doing it. Liverpool has been doing it. They bought a couple of 17-year-olds this summer. So I think you're going to start to see the fact that teams are going to start going after younger talent with a view to selling them on and making a profit and then buying the superstar.
So, G, what does that mean then, do you think, for young players? Is the fact that buying the top talent across Europe now, for probably even the top teams, mm-hmm. is difficult now, does that mean that for young players it's a good thing because they will get a chance to play, or is it a bad thing for young players because it means then that you've got the likes of United, Liverpool, Arsenal, City buying 16-year-olds just because they want to get them before someone else gets them, but that 16-year-old might not actually be that good in the end, and you might end up going through the system and being used almost as a bit of a... I don't know, as a bit of a kind of a toy to just get that person before a Milan or I don't know, Juventus.
Yeah, I'm going to say it's a good thing. I do see both sides, and you made a really compelling argument. You basically created a fence.
See what I did there?
But I want to go on the side of it's a good thing. I'm seeing the players getting the opportunities, particularly in England. And I always say this because, you know, because in a sense, Chelsea have been doing this for a while now. It's just not in terms of the stockpiling. It's only recently that people have been getting into the team. But I always think if you're good enough, there's always a path to kind of make your way back. You don't have to sign. You see what Callum Hudson-Odoi did over the last couple of years. You don't have to sign that contract. You can enforce things. There are ways that if you're savvy enough, even if you start at a big club, you can start at a big club, train with the best players, have the best facilities, but still make your way and have another career. You know, Kevin De Bruyne and Mo Salah, I mean, you know, they weren't like academy players, but they were still young players. They came over, got caught up in the system, but they've gone away and they've worked on their craft and they've come back. So I'd say even if you get trapped into a contract, there's still always a way to come back and make a career for yourself. A lot of it actually depends on people looking at their own finances and not being greedy and actually saying, you know, looking themselves in the mirror and saying, am I good enough to play for United? Am I good enough to play for Tottenham? Maybe I need an extra year at Fulham. And making those things, and actually making those demands when you're signing as well. You know, that, you know, a lot of people are signing and staying with the current club for a year or two because it makes more sense to help their development. So I think it's overall it's a good thing. There will be victims, as there is in any type of thing. But it's more about if players need to take responsibilities for their career, not just think about the short term, the house and the car and the money, and think about the long term money they can earn if they develop themselves.
So someone, Ollie, that your lot bought this summer, Ryan Sessegnon, has he played yet?
No, he's been injured.
He's been injured, okay. Do you get the sense that there was an element of Spurs thinking, because I know you've been tracking him for about 3 years now, let's get him in before someone else does? But this is off the back of a year where, okay, Fulham were crap last year, so it's harsh to kind of judge his season, you know, in line with Fulham's. But he wasn't great either when he did play. Is there a fear that you've bought a young player who, off the back of not showing much when he was in the Premier League, and he might not fulfil his potential that he was maybe showing a couple of years ago?
I think that's always a risk, whoever you buy in, though, isn't it? I mean, you know, it's not an exact science, is it, buying players? So there's every chance that you could buy a player and it doesn't work out. So, you know, it doesn't really matter who you get in. That's always the risk you take, isn't it? You could spend a load of money on a player, and the player's, you know, £50 million on a player, and he doesn't really, you know, come up to scratch. So that can happen. But I think with Sessegnon, they're looking at it and thinking he's got potential. But my issue with Sessegnon is, what is he? Do you know what I mean? It's like, is he a winger? Is he a left back? Is he the long-term replacement for Rose? So I'm not really sure what his role is. You know, he might, if they're going to use him defensively, then maybe he's someone they're looking at as a wing back rather than a left back. Or if he is going to be a left back, he's going to need to bulk up a bit. But I'm not sure what his role is. But yeah, he's a good young player. I think Spurs look at it and think, you know what? We've got nothing to lose here. If we get this guy for £20 million, we know that he wants to come to Spurs. We know he doesn't want to go back to the Championship. We take a punt on him. If it works out, great. If it doesn't work out, you know, we move him on. So there's no risk for Spurs in spending £20 million on a player like that.
Go on.
I'm just going to pick up a point that you just made about not knowing the player's position. And I've kind of noticed this with a lot of young players these days, especially strikers, and which is an interesting point because Tammy Abraham, you just know he's a striker, by the way.
So, you did used to be a winger at one point.
Why are you coming with that? Anyway.
cheers.
No, but did you get what I'm saying? There's a lot of young players these days that even, I think we're going to talk about Dele Alli later, but I think he's a victim of this as well, where you get a player and almost as if you buy him because you saw him play in this position. And then he comes into the team because you want to force him into a position in your team. You don't really know what he is. Players get forced into positions. Like Marcus Rashford has been playing on the wing for a number of years. And when he first came in the team as a centre forward at 17 years old, I think he's now 21. And nobody knows what he is. And that's because he hasn't spent the time, whether it's in the youth team or going out alone to the Championship, just playing a position and kind of like finalising his craft between the ages of 17 to like 19, 18, 20, right? And I think you're seeing this with a lot of players, and I think it's really it's a really big problem with player development at the moment.
And just going back to the kind of big money being spent on players and if that's still going to be a thing, I think the most expensive transfer this window across Europe was Felix. Was anyone more expensive than Felix's window? He went for 126 million.
I don't think so.
I think he was the most expensive window. So do you feel, Gabriel, that we're going to see less of those transfers? And what does that mean? Because Neymar couldn't move because Paris Saint-Germain wanted, I think, at least what they paid for him back. No one's paying 225 million for Neymar. Dybala, I know there were kind of contractual and personal things that why he couldn't move. But do you feel that the days, or even for the foreseeable future, the days of paying 150 mil plus for players,
is done? And if not, who do you think will be the next one that goes for 100?
No, I don't think it's done. I think it's going to be transported now to the young players, and I think you will see more João Felixes. If you look at it, when Man United bought Pogba, even though he was an established player, the rationale for it being so high was that there was still an element of paying for potential. If you look at us buying Kepa, the rationale was that, while he's not a world record quality, if you look at him and you look at Alisson, there's a clear difference in quality, right? Mm-hmm. But they were around the same price. Why is that? Because he's younger and he supposedly has this potential that he can grow on. So I think actually you will see less of it at the big names, but you will see more of it in terms of younger players who and big money being spent on them. So I don't think the fees are going to go away. It's just going to be looked, going to be transported a different way.
So who do we think is going to be the next 150 million pound player to be signed?
Jadon Sancho.
You think he's the next one?
Yeah.
Who do you think buys him?
I don't know.
I know you want to buy him.
Go back to Man City.
Wouldn't be surprised if I was asked.
He's apparently he's a Chelsea fan and he's best friends. He's best friends with Callum. Oh, yeah. We got the Hazard money. I'm just saying, Jadon, give me a call, yeah.
Ollie, do you agree? Do you think that we will still see plenty of 150 million pound signings, but it won't be for established players now because those are in a bracket that, as we're seeing with Neymar, even the top teams can't afford. Mm. We're going to see it now for the next 17, 18 year old hot prospects across Europe.
I'm not sure if you'll see 150 million pounds being spent on these sort of players. They'll spend a lot of money, but I don't think that kind of money will be spent on them. The thing is, I think the real change. Everything's driven by money in football, as we know. And the thing, the real change here is that, we've had this new, it's certainly in this country, where they've had these, these new kind of stipulations for the academies and the training grounds and whatever. That's all part of it, I think. All part of it of you being, having that A status, that A-class status, and being an academy that young kids want to go to. So I think that's a really big development in terms of these teams. You've got elite teams who have got really great academies and whatever, and they're the kind of clubs that, unless you've got that training ground, Wenger started this with Arsenal, didn't he, with the training ground at Colney and all the rest of it, and now everyone's followed suit. So Man United have got, their one at Carrington, Chelsea have got Cobham and whatever, Spurs have followed suit, so everyone's doing it now. Man City have got a great training academy. This is what it's all about. And now if you haven't got that, there's no way you're going to get the next young, hot star who's off the conveyor belt. You've got to have that. That's all coming to line, and that's part of it that's, I think, that's kind of, driven a lot of this change. You've got a lot of these clubs now have got fantastic academies and fantastic training grounds. It's part of the selling point, isn't it? So now you've got people just saying, well, actually, if we can just get these players in and, basically do what Chelsea have done. Chelsea have done it really well. But up until now, until the transfer ban, they've not been giving these guys a chance. And it's been a revenue stream for them, hasn't it, for ages, where they've been training up these guys and then selling them on to whatever. But now this is a situation where it's like, hold on a minute, we could actually bring these into the team. And I actually think that Abramovich, it's come at the right time because Abramovich has probably got tired.
He was losing interest, wasn't he?
He was getting tired. Well, not losing interest. I think he was getting tired of managers just saying to him, give me £100 million for this player.
Correct.
Give me £150 million for that player. Yeah. I think he got to the point of thinking, I'm not getting in a bidding war with Man City. Let them do what they're doing. We're going a different way. And, Chelsea are doing it well. And there might actually come a point where after all this time where Chelsea have been, spending more money than they're bringing in, they might become a club that's balancing the books because they're bringing in players now through their academy into the first team and not spending ridiculous amounts of money on the next new hot talent. I think that's all part of it, really.
And I'd say as well, this crop is better than previous crops. Like there is this kind of assumption that if Chelsea had done this 2-3 years ago, that the outcome would have been the same. Like, I'm not sure, who's the guy at Bournemouth now that went to Liverpool?
Oh, Solanke.
So I'm not sure if he'd done it with Solanke last season, it would have been the same result. These guys are, this crop is better. I know Jose was saying it on Sky Sports, really to kind of build a defence for himself. Actually, these 5-6 young players that we have now, I've always said to you, I'm not, like, you got, like, a lot of people make a lot of about the young players, and I'll be like, well, listen, when they're good enough, like when we get excited about it. I think this is the time.
Okay, okay. I need you just to stop a little bit there. Because,
just briefly, go on.
Because let's not build Jose this fence. Yeah, because they did have Kevin De Bruyne. They did have Mo Salah.
But they weren't academy players.
I'm just talking about young players, bro.
Okay, well, Jose's aside, he can have his fence.
We had this conversation about Tammy before. You've had Tammy in your squad for a couple of seasons, and I said to this, like, last season, that Tammy should be your number one striker. You laughed.
He should have been our number one striker last season. I think he should have. I think he needed that. You didn't think he needed that loan at Villa?
I think from when he was at Bristol, I think he demonstrated the fact that he can play. He should be playing in Premier League.
And just finally, are your crop of young talents?
Oh, he's gonna pull it on me now. He's gonna pull it on me. Go on.
Are they better than his mobs in 92?
No way.
I think there's a fair shout to them.
Yeah,
but,
you're taking a mic.
The thing is that, I mean,
it's early, granted,
but like. Gary and Phil never were they supremely talented. They were very effective at what they did, but were they supremely talented? Scholes was.
Gee, what was
Beckham?
What was Giggs doing at 17?
Just end the conversation.
Fair play. Yeah, eat the humble pie. let's move on. All right, let's now talk Wolves chat because they've had a little bit of a. Have it straight. Not the greatest start to their season after a fantastic year last year. And to do so, I'm going to bring in Rye from the Wolves Fancast podcast. Rye, how you doing, man?
Yeah, really good, guys. Thanks for having us on.
No. Cheers for coming on, man. From what you're seeing this season is significantly different to what was happening last season.
It's a really difficult one. And you're right, it's not been a good start from our perspective. I think the narrative with Wolves, and probably from the outside, people looking in were looking at us thinking, oh, it's the second season syndrome. We've got the Europa games. They've got a small squad. And how are things going to fare? And, yeah, we haven't had a good start. But to put things into context, if I look at the games, I look at Leicester. You know, we've got a point against Leicester. And, you know, I think you'll agree they're going to have a good season this year. United, OK, they're a little bit indifferent, but we've still got a point against United. They are United. And then we had a couple of bad performances against Everton, Chelsea. Who's talking about Abraham had a good game against us. So, in context, in terms of where we're at, yeah, we haven't recorded our first win, but I'm not overly concerned at this stage. In terms of what the difference is, I think, yeah, there's the extra games. There's perhaps a little bit of bad form in key areas alike. But really, at this stage, I'm still pretty relaxed in terms of where we're going to be. And I think, ultimately, we may drop a couple of places at the end of the season, but I still think we'll be top 10 and be competing in Europe and on other levels. So I'm not concerned at this stage, but,
Well, on that point, I remember when we did our first podcast of this season, we discussed Wolves, and I remember saying that, talking on behalf of you guys, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I remember saying that I think Wolves would take finishing 12th this year if it meant getting to, say, a semi-final of the Europa League. Is that fair?
I think so. I think I can only speak as a fan, and I think, you know, we've not been in Europe since 81. I mean, for me as a fan in Europe, it's been like the Anglo-Italian Cup in the Championship years, or it's been pre-season games. So there's a real excitement for us because of our generation and probably the one prior. We've not been in Europe, so that, you know, that's probably took a massive sort of focus. So I would personally take a good run at the semi-final in Europa and top half or even 12th, yeah, I would take that because, you know, Europe for me is still significant and it's exciting. And, you know, as long as we retain our status in the league, which I think we will, then I'll take a little bit of a drop because Europe is still exciting and still new territory for us.
We were talking earlier on about young players. Do you have any, you know, young players at Wolves that, you know, coming through and that you're particularly excited about? I know you've got Gibbs White, who I saw quite a bit of last year. Is anybody else that, you know, you're thinking, rather than going out and splurging cash on players, you've got some players coming through?
It's a difficult one for us at the moment. I mean, Gibbs White is the one. I think he needs a run in the side, but ultimately he's got Neves and Martino in front of him, so he's going to find it difficult. And as every young player, he's going through spells. I thought at the start of the season he might get a loan maybe in the Championship, but he's still involved. Elsewhere, we've got quite a squad of players out on loan. So we've got For example, we've got Cameron John at Doncaster. We've got Niall Ennis. I mean, Niall Ennis has been in the England youth setup, and he's looking decent at Doncaster. But I think at this stage, perhaps not. Maybe towards January, the back end of the season, and maybe next year. But I think for the Wolves team, in terms of the young players, it's a bit of a development season for those. So you'll probably see them on loan this year, and then maybe get more of an airing next season.
Just finally, Ryan, do you feel that you have to have, and you can quantify this as you feel fit, have to have a good season to keep hold of the likes of Ruben Neves and Rio Patricio? You've got some good players there. Are those guys locked in for a while, do you think, regardless? Or do you think they're going to want to see another at least top 10 finish in order to stay?
Yeah, I think that's the key. I mean, ultimately, in terms of the way to retain players is to be successful. But, you know, these players were brought in, and they brought in, you know, the players you mentioned, well, not Patricio, but Neves. He came on board with us in the Championship. So I think, yeah, we've got to grow with them. And I think giving them the opportunity to play European football will be key. So I think, yeah, as long as the club are progressing, I think January will be a big window for us. Nuno does like a small squad, and I was a bit surprised, even taking that into account, he didn't buy more this past window. So I think if those players you mentioned see us continue to recruit and buy top quality players and push on in Europe, then I think we'll be fine. I think he's got a good team spirit there. He's got a good squad. So I'm not concerned about players going just yet.
Ryan, cheers for your time, pal.
No problem. Take care.
Thank you very much, man. Cheers, man. Ryan there from the Wolves Fan Cast podcast. Josh, and you mentioned last season something about Nuno Espirito Santo. You said you liked him.
Mm-hmm.
You know my stance on Ollie. I think he'll be gone by Christmas. I took that from last season. Is it an insane shout that he could be your manager next season?
That he could be our manager next season? I don't think it's an insane shout, but I wouldn't want that to be the case.
You wouldn't want that?
No.
But you said you like him. So
I think I like... Yeah, I like
at
a
that
lot,
level, do you mean?
I like a lot of managers... Right. Yeah. I like a lot of managers, but it doesn't mean that I think they're the right manager for Manchester United.
Okay.
And I think it really depends on what the strategy is, right? If we are trying to be a club that is trying to play progressive attacking football, then I don't think he's the right manager. Because I don't think that's the way he sets up Wolves per se. I think they're a little bit more pragmatic, and I think they're a little bit more of a counter-attacking team.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we want to go down the road of what we've been saying that we want to go down the road of when we got rid of Jose, which was to be entertaining, to be on the front foot, to be attacking team, and then I think we need to sign a manager that has a tactical setup that's suited to that. And I don't think he's the guy. So I think he's a good manager. I think.
Who's that then?
I think you got to start looking at some of these young up-and-coming managers in Germany, like Julian Nagelsmann at Leipzig, Marco Rose, Tuchel at PSG. If he wants out of there, I think he could be a good shout. Yeah.
So some basically, of those guys. No one in the Prem?
In the Premier League...
You don't want his guy?
No, all right. So in the Premier League,
why didn't you just ask that from the start?
Exactly. No.
Taking a look at your book.
In the Premier League, I really like Pochettino. I wouldn't be angry. I'd be happy if you got Pochettino. But remember what I just said. I don't think Pochettino is a manager who has a tactical setup, which is fast paced, attacking, and entertaining. I think his tactical setup, the way he sets up his team, is quite. I find Tottenham boring to watch, to be honest with you. I think they're quite a boring team. I think he's a very, very efficient LVG. I think he's a great manager. I think he'll be very successful if he went to a big club. I do not think he's of the mould of an attacking team that gets bums off seats, and I don't think that he's a very entertaining manager.
And you want that?
No, and I would prefer that, which is why I prefer to go for one of those young. I think that like when you watch football, I think there's waves of tactical changes and you need to be on trend. That's what I think. And I think there's a the current trend of Football Managers is very high pressing, very energetic attacking teams. And I think Pochettino will be a very successful manager because his teams are energetic and they're very high pressing. I don't think he's very entertaining, and I don't think his teams are necessarily very attacking per se.
Okay.
And so that's why I wouldn't necessarily say I wouldn't.
You wouldn't
want
turn him down, but he wouldn't be
but
your first.
But he's not my first choice for that reason.
Fair enough.
Any response to that, Ollie? I just think it was a
weird. Let me do the story, all right? Let me stir it up, all right? We'll get there later. Right, so I asked all three of you guys, we're going to do this every week, I asked you guys to think of two players, one from the Premier League, one from not in the Premier League, two players who you would love the current generation of football fan to see play now. So obviously this person, it's either at they're worse now or retired or dead. And I hope you've all got two to pick from. I'll start with you, G.
So, sorry, does this have to be a player you've seen in your lifetime that you want the current generation to see? Or is it someone from way back? It could be...
You've seen. Someone you've seen and you appreciated and you liked watching that you would like the current football fan to watch. Go on, G.
See, I was going to go with Scholes because I don't want to see what people see, what he's really like. Rather than all the hyperbole that he gets now.
The gun down for one moment.
But I guess I actually, and for selfish reasons as well, I actually went for John Barnes because I actually felt, I mean, I started watching football early 90s, just giving my age away. And from what I hear, that was kind of the latter part of his career where the injuries are kind of taking its toll when he wasn't as fast or as sharp as he could have been. So imagine I would have liked to have seen a younger John Barnes for myself, but also I'd like to see the generation see that John Barnes, to see someone perform under scrutiny.
So is this, just so I understand
so he's at least seen him, so you couldn't say...
So you're not saying a player that you saw at their peak?
No, a player that you saw and enjoyed watching.
But I still enjoyed watching him at that part. But I just felt
you enjoyed watching him at Newcastle.
Not at Newcastle, but at the later stages of Liverpool. I mean, yeah, even at Newcastle, I enjoyed watching. But he lost his pace, but the brain was still there. Yeah. And I think from the abuse that he got and the fact that he rose above it and still was able to play under the circumstances.
Oh, wow. That's a nice little life feature. You just totally gone there and just serious it up, G.
Yeah. I'd like to see him. You said the one international as well,
yeah,
right?
one that didn't come to the Prem.
Yeah, I'd say Batistuta. Just because, like, the natural finisher seems to kind of be a dying art now. Everyone's got to be able to hold it up and stuff. And I think like that type of like traditional number nine, like it's kind of been a bit lost. Mm-hmm. And Batistuta was my favourite kind of like watching Serie A when I was younger and Channel 4, even though all they tried to do was show us like Gazza every week, Gazza this, Gazza that. But once they got over Gazza watch, you could watch Batistuta and he was really good.
Just on that, I found out recently, well, about a year ago, that the whole reason Channel 4 bought the rights for Serie A was because Gazza
was there. Yeah.
It was somebody went there. Okay. So Batistuta and John Barnes. Ollie, go next.
Wow. This is going to embarrass me, isn't it? How far I can go back. I was actually going to say John Barnes is one of my favourites as well. Bearing in mind that I remember him from the late 80s.
At his peak.
When that forward line was put together by Dale Gleish of Barnes, Beardsley and Aldridge.
Oh, no.
They were brilliant. And that is, to be honest, that is my favourite Liverpool team, because I thought that Liverpool team was really attacking, whereas some of the older Liverpool teams were a bit more crabby and, you know, and Souness was just a leg breaker. So, but this team was, they were all out attack, and that team I loved. And John Barnes, in his first couple of years at Liverpool, he was unbelievable. Seriously, he was fantastic. He was unplayable in the modern parlance. He was brilliant. But seeing as G's taken that now, it's kind of... I also remember... I'm old enough to remember West Brom's three players as well, when they had Cunningham, Regis and Batson. And Laurie Cunningham was fantastic. And I still remember some of his greatest games when those three were playing together. And I don't think that those guys get enough credit, because whenever people talk about the
the experiences of black players in the game, a lot of people talk about, you know, or asked about their favourite black players or whatever. They always talk about Wrighty and, oh, Wrighty this and Wrighty that. And, you know, Ian Wright was great and all the rest of it. But these guys, when you talk about players who really had to deal with serious issues, like you were saying with John Barnes, I mean, these guys were putting up with ridiculous amount of abuse and having to keep playing their game. In fact, on the way here, I was watching a YouTube of when West Brom beat Man United 5-3 in 1978. It was a fantastic game because they basically, even the most amazing thing about that game is that Rory Cunningham, during quite a few parts of the clip that they show, Gerald Stinstad, who's the commentator, is saying, you know, and the black players here are having to put up with ridiculous abuse from the Man United fans and all the rest of it. And this was a time where people just didn't acknowledge it. It was going on, but people didn't acknowledge it. And for him to be commentating and saying that is quite something, I think. And you can just see it on YouTube. But yeah, it was watching that game. That if you want to see how good those guys were in a team, watch that YouTube of Man United 3, West Brom 5. Those three guys were fantastic. There's a goal from Len Cantello where the ball's played into Cyril Regis and Regis does a backflip to Cantello and Cantello hits it first time into the roof of the net. Brilliant goal.
Okay.
Regis and Cunningham in that game just tore Man United apart. In fact, I saw a very good documentary as well about Laurie Cunningham. And one of the things that Ian Wright said in it was that he used to give, because Stuart Houston used to be the assistant manager at Arsenal, and he said that Stuart Houston, he used to run him every day about Laurie Cunningham, because there's a clip in it where you can just see Stuart Houston like, trying to catch up Cunningham, he can't catch him. And he's just like, so he used to go up to him anytime, he used to just run up to him and go, Laurie Cunningham! just to wipe him up. So yeah, it's a brilliant clip, worth watching. Anyone who wants to see what those how good those guys were, watch that. But I would say Laurie Cunningham.
And abroad? Who's a player abroad?
It would have to be Maradona, to be honest. Another documentary I went to see a couple of months ago was the Maradona one of his time at Napoli. What a player. What a player. And, you know, I can remember the 82 and the 86 World Cup. Maradona was just, I mean, when they won the World Cup, he basically won it for them. And one of the great things, and before we get into the conversation about people like Dele Alli and bloody Christian Eriksen and all these sort of people. But I'm just saying, and one of the most important things about Maradona was when he said in the World Cup final, right, they were 2-0 up and Argentina lost a 2-0 lead to the Germans, to West Germany. And they came back and he said, when you're a number 10, you know that there are points in a game where you have to do something. You know what I mean? You have to step up. You have to make something happen. Mm. And that's what I mean. Well, that's what I was always saying about someone like Dele Alli. If you're a number 10, yeah, you have got to make things happen. You can't just be like, oh, I'll do a couple of fancy flicks and stuff. You've got to make it and you've got to turn games around. So on June the 1st, when Eriksen and Alli were playing in that game, they should have done something. But the point is Maradona...
That game really burned you, didn't it?
I'm just saying. You know, that's what... It's not a joke. If you're a number 10, yeah, you're the main man. You've got to make something happen because that's a luxury position. And you only give that to players who actually deliver. But and Maradona was, in my lifetime, he's the best player I've ever seen by a mile. And I would love for anyone who hasn't seen him, because people always go on about Maradona and Messi. People don't really understand with Messi, the game's changed. The pitches are like pristine. The players, he went to Barcelona and spent 2 years, Maradona, getting kicked around the pitches, had his leg broken for him by one of I can't remember which team it was, but basically they broke his leg. He was basically getting assaulted every time he played. So there's no comparison. The game in the 80s and the game now are two different, they're completely different games. So people who compare between Maradona and Messi, and you can't compare because the game's different, you know? Right. So Maradona, for me, I'd love to see him play on the sort of pitches and with the sort of protection that players get now.
Josh, I've got a feeling Josh might take my foreign one, but I'm hoping he doesn't. But go on, go foreign first. Not,
I don't think I will. This one, I had a couple of players in mind. Shout out Edgar Davids, Seydorf, Ronaldo.
On Seydorf, sorry, just to cut you there. I've often thought about this, often, in the last few years, because he's been quite prominent on TV and he's managed like every other club in the world. Was he particularly great at any one thing, say?
Oh, jeez. So this is the reason, right?
Why I'm gonna... and I'm asking you, not because I'm saying he wasn't, but I just myself, for someone that won so much.
No, he was. And this is the reason why the player I'm going to pick is Michael Laudrup. Okay. And the reason why I'm going to pick him and players like Seydolf is that I think today we are so focused on stats, right? And these were just players who played the game and were excellent at the game. Like Laudrup was a brilliant passer, vision, skills. Like he could pass you the ball and lay it on your foot from wherever he is on the pitch. Mm. He could see where you was on the pitch. He didn't have to look at you. He could pass you the ball anywhere. He was probably, I would say, one of my favourite players that I've seen play football. Like, I just think he was a quality player. And I think today we don't appreciate football in terms of its artistry, and we don't appreciate like players who are just geniuses on the pitch. All we appreciate now is someone who can bang the ball top corner or score 30 goals or get 25 assists. And it kind of takes some of like why I enjoy football out of it for me. Like players like, obviously there's other players in that you could mention, like Zidane, same kind of thing, right? Mm. Like he wasn't a brilliant goal scorer, he wasn't going to get you 25 assists a season, but he was just a fantastic football player, he's a genius. Mm. And I think like we're missing that in football. Like I can't really think of players these days where I think this guy is a genius. Like, not because he bangs so many goals or because he's getting so many assists.
I can only think of one in the Premier League, and who? Genius is maybe a stretch, but David Silva. He's the only person that I think...
He's not on their level.
Maybe genius genius, but he's the only player that I think runs games and affects games without touching the ball.
Mm, yeah, do you know what I mean? I like that.
Game without touching the ball.
But I feel like that kind of player is just dead now. Like it's like a dying breed. De Bruyne's a quality player, but I think De Bruyne gets a lot of his adulation because of the balls he plays, which end up in assists, right? Like... A lot of people, when De Bruyne doesn't get an assist in the game, like, watch what happens after the game. People start saying, oh, he didn't play a brilliant ball, or he didn't do this, or like, all of the focus is on the brilliant balls he plays, not necessarily on how he can move players around the pitch and move players out of people's way, like, and create space for his teammates without even touching the ball, which is something that Laudrup was a genius at. He didn't have to touch the ball to affect the game.
Mm. And who's your Premier League one?
Premier League one, probably the best player. I hate to say this, the best player I've seen in Premier League. I just couldn't think of another player to talk was Henry. I just think the arrogance of the player, like the guy he was,
But surely he's a modern player. Surely he's modern enough.
He is modern.
Yeah, but he's enough. He's been around.
Well, if you're a if you're a 24, 25
he's playing like what? He's playing like 10 years ago.
Exactly. I speak to quite a lot of people now who haven't seen Thierry Henry play football. Yeah. Oh, wow. That's why I realize I'm getting old, bro.
Wow. Yeah, it's true. But I'm ancient, and I don't know how old Willie is.
My nephew hasn't. My nephew saw him play at Barcelona, but that was towards the end of his career, right? Man. So my nephew hasn't seen him in Arsenal apart from like clips on YouTube.
Or even France. Yeah. Arsenal weren't winning.
So like for me, Henry was like, I think he's the best player I've seen in the Premier League. And not because like, I just think he's just a ridiculous player.
Mm.
Like he was just unbelievable. Like he'd do everything. He could score goals. He could set up goals. He could beat players. Like he could do all the tricks. He was arrogant. Like that kind of like enjoying your football. You want to watch it because he's taking the mickey out of defenders and things like that. I loved him.
And I saw a documentary on a defender. Who was it in the Premier League? You know those guys do those specials with Premier League players who retired. I forgot who it was now. But they were the person was talking about Henry saying that, I think it might have been Carragher. I was just saying that he was just too quick for everybody. He was too strong for everybody.
He was too quick for Carragher.
Well, yeah. I'm too quick for Carragher. But he could jump higher than everybody else. No. Physically, he was just stronger and fitter than everybody else.
Do you remember there was a time he knocked the pool past someone down the wing and he ran off the
Carragher.
Pitch?
It was Carragher.
Oh, that was ridiculous.
It was embarrassing.
That was embarrassing.
He used to terrorise.
That was embarrassing.
He terrorised him. My favourite clip of Thierry Henry, though, you might remember it, Jordan, is the one where, you remember the free kick he scored against Blackburn?
The
Blackburn free kick.
Yes.
He took a free kick. Park. Unbelievable.
Yes.
He took a free kick, right? He took a free kick And he scored, yeah? He put it in the top corner and the ref said, no, you took it
before. Wigan. Yeah, that was Wigan.
No, I'm sure it's Blackburn. No, it was Wigan. And he said, you took it before I told you you could do it.
That was crazy.
And then he was like, I've got to take it again. He was like, yeah, take it again.
Yeah,
take it again. He did exactly the same thing. Before he even celebrated, he went, listen, you happy with that? Yeah.
No, that's what I was talking about.
That was, I'm telling you, like, even as a Spurs fan, I was like, wow.
He just had that personality, you know, on the pitch, like... You just can't touch me, bruv.
And I like that as well. Right, let's move on now, guys. Just quick FFP fantasy update. You're 27th with a game week points of 55 points. Oh, dear.
Yeah, it's just above the average.
Is it?
So top of the league is Connie Bolly, who's the new leader with a game week point of 76 points. Sean is now down to second. Regional Species is now third. Josh, you're 10th. The game week of 70 points.
All right.
Where are you? I'm up to 16 for the game weeks of 84 points I've got this week. So I smashed it. I had Silver in my team. Alexander Arnold in my team.
De Bruyne in my team.
De Bruyne was my captain, so I smashed it. So well done to me. Yeah. Right, let's move on now, guys. Let's rattle for a few more things before we end.
Wait, hold on, George. Like, who's your players?
So I was gonna go. I was gonna go. Forum was going to be Nedved.
Nedved was just the Don.
Yeah. For me. Just an absolute
I can see why you say I was going to pick him.
Yeah, I thought you might go for Nedved, but I don't think, even when he was at his best, I don't think he was fully appreciated and rated.
Yeah.
Nedved was an absolute Don. And who was my... I forgot who my Premier League one was. It'll come to me in a minute. Let's talk Rashford very briefly, guys.
Ah, cheers.
Because he's had a tough couple of weeks. And I know... I'll start with you, G, but I know Josh... doesn't think he is or ever is going to be the guy to take United back to where they need to be. That's not to say that he doesn't rate Rashford, just don't think he's of that level. I think he could be, and I just wonder if he's come to, if he's at United at the wrong time, because he's not being developed. There's a whole lot of madness around. I think he's got the skill sets to be a guy that can get 20 goals a season.
So would you say could be or could have been if he was coached correctly?
Could have been. I think if there wasn't the madness around United at this time, I think he could be now. I think he now could be the guy that could be relied upon to get 20 goals a season. Am I being generous?
I look at his game and it just doesn't really seem to have come along. You know, he seems to kind of almost like his peak was his breakout. Yeah, when he hasn't really. Don't get me wrong. There's probably been some slight improvements, but not the type of improvements you'd expect for his potential. Match of the Day did a little bit of a feature on him in terms of his movement yesterday, in the West Ham game. And he just doesn't seem to have that striker nous that maybe... And it makes me wonder whether he is a better winger, because he just doesn't seem to do that.
But I wonder if, because he's been on the wing for so long, if his mindset is now kind of warped and he's almost kind of like confused as to the runs he's making. I wonder if he's almost confused, because he's been a winger now for 4 years, a winger, wide forward for 4 years.
Yeah.
And I just wonder now, to kind of go from that to now being the centre forward, I just wonder if his mind is still telling him to do things that he's been doing for the past 4 years.
It could just be down to bad. It could be down to bad coaching. We don't know. And he's here. I mean, we spoke earlier about academies, and Carrington was mentioned, and not sure exactly why, but yeah, it could just be down to bad coaching. But yeah, either way, I agree with Josh. I'm not seeing anything to say. It would have to be a huge leap now for him to get to be where he could be the guy for Man United. I think he will be in the squad, and he'd be definitely worth keeping in the squad. He loves the club and he has an affinity, but I think if Man United are going to get back to where they want to be, they're going to at some point need another striker.
Ollie, is there a danger that he could be another Theo Walcott?
Wow.
On the scene, young.
Wow.
Everyone's getting excited, but in 5 years' time of doing this podcast and Rashford is at Everton.
Wow.
Didn't he say the other day that he sees himself as a wide man rather than a number nine?
Gary Neville said that.
He came out and said that he's not a number nine.
Yeah.
So there's some problem there, because obviously...
That's a big problem.
Yeah, because it seemed to me that Solskjaer was grooming him for that position.
Yeah.
And now he's saying, well, that's not my position. Yeah, so that all seems really weird to me, because I always thought that Martial was... I mean, when we say he's a winger, is he? Because I don't know, I don't watch him enough, but is he a right-sided player, or does he prefer to play from the left coming onto his right foot? Right, so he basically wants to play the same position as Martial.
No, because Martial doesn't want to play on the left.
So Martial wants to play through the middle, even though he doesn't score enough goals.
Okay, so...
this is madness. So,
carry on, I'll jump in later.
No. Tell me, because I'm kind of confused, so, because this goes to the heart of what Jordan's asking me. All right,
I think there's some things which is... I think in the media and in the camp of England, there has been an agenda for Marcus Rashford to be the centre-forward at Manchester United, and it's been an agenda that's been being perpetuated for about 3 years. And I think it's been wrong, because he's not a striker, and partly because he's been playing on the wing too long and he hasn't developed himself as a centre forward, but because even in our youth ranks he wasn't a centre forward, right? And so he actually doesn't know how to be a centre forward. And the thing about Martial is that Martial, before he came to United, was a centre forward. When you say he doesn't score enough goals, Rashford has never scored as many goals as Martial has in a Man United shirt ever, right? And at the start of the season, people were saying Ole wants Rashford to be centre forward. But actually, we started the season with our centre forward as Martial, who scored 2-2, and Rashford on the left. So actually, Rashford, the only people that I hear talking about Rashford being the centre forward is people in the Sky Sports newsroom like Gary Neville.
And it wasn't until yesterday that Jose was talking about him and kind of reminded me and everybody, I'm sure, he's been in the first team now for five. This is his fifth season.
Is it fourth or fifth?
He said he's been under 2.5 years under Van Gaal.
He wasn't 2.5 years under 2.5 years.
He said 2.5 under Van Gaal. Two under Jose.
It's his fourth season.
This is fourth season now.
Yeah, he broke through at the end of the season under Van Gaal.
Okay.
Right? Because we had an injury crisis and it was like some knockout game against Michelin or something like that.
That's right, and then you had us.
And then, it was towards the end of the season, and I think maybe he played the next season with him or something like that.
So what's going to happen to him then? Because I don't, if we all agree that, if you guys agree that maybe he's not the guy to get 25 goals a season, I don't think he's good enough to be a winger. What's he going to do?
Let me tell you the thing about Rashford, and Theo Walcott is a decent example, and the reason why I say that...
Better than Theo Walcott.
He's a what,
I never said he's...
I'm
not saying he's Theo Walcott's level. I'm saying Theo Walcott's a good example of the problem that happens with the hype machine of English players, right? Because if you actually look at... Like, I've had a conversation with someone about Rashford and Tammy Abraham. If you look through the youth ranks, right, Tammy Abraham outscored Rashford in every single season.
He did.
Rashford wasn't even... When you talk about United strikers, Rashford has not even come close to what Mason Greenwood has done at youth level, even James Wilson, even Giuseppe Rossi. He wasn't even in that caliber of striker, right? He came in, he scored a few goals. This is the typical thing what happened with Makeda before. I think Rashford's a decent player. I think he was always rated in United, not necessarily as a centre forward. I think he's a decent player.
He was never a wonder kid.
Yeah, he came in, people started making comparisons with Mbappe. Right, yeah. It's like who do you think?
Shout out to
Terrence. Like, who do you think this guy is? Right, and then, like, from we said it before, between the ages of 17 and 20, he hasn't really played as a centre forward, so he hasn't even developed his craft in the game. Like, it would have been better for him to go on loan to the Championship, like Jermaine Defoe did.
I remember saying when Zlatan came to United, and there was all this talk about he should stay at United, Rashford, because he can learn off Zlatan. And I said, no. To get better, you have to play.
Forget
all this in training.
It depends on your age, right? Remember, we're talking about a period of 3 years. Mm. I think it would have been good for him to stay in the squad that season because he hadn't really played as a centre-forward in the youth ranks, right? And even Van Gaal said it before he left. He said that this guy needs to... He's not a centre-forward yet. There was a game he played him against Spurs away. And he took him off at half-time because he wasn't holding the ball up. He wasn't going up for headers. He wasn't like... He just wasn't doing what a centre-forward is supposed to do. But he has talent, right? So you need to get him to kind of to play... I think it would have been good for him to kind of train with Ibrahimovic, train with Martial and, like, you know, like the season, get a few games here and there, and then maybe, okay, all right, next season, let's see if we can find you a Prem club, lower level, or a Championship club where you can go be the centre forward for a season. and learn your craft and do what Tammy did. But we didn't do that.
I've just got to move on because I have a few more things I want to rattle through. But just briefly, Josh,
you can learn from Tammy, is what we're saying.
I just think it's player development. I think our player development in terms of Rashford is poor. Angel Gomez is poor. He spent a season last season playing under-23s when I think he's like way beyond under-23 football for the past 2 years.
So he's stagnated.
Yeah.
Is there any chance that United this season could finish mid-table?
Yeah, of course.
You think something could happen?
Wow.
Why not? Like, yes. All right, take a look at our squad and tell me it's better than mid-table.
Struggling.
Pogba?
All right. I never said a player. I said the squad. Like our midfield is McTominay and Pogba, right? Mm. Like Rashford on the left, Daniel James, yeah? And then Marshall. I think I couldn't look at it and say we couldn't come below Leicester, but I think we could come above Leicester, but we could also come below Leicester. Like, so
I mean, yeah. You could arguably throw Chelsea and Arsenal I kind of pick on United on this one because. At least with Chelsea, I think there's a spirit and there's a harmony between the fans, manager, and club.
Nah, Chelsea.
I think they won't finish top. They won't finish mid-table. Arsenal are in pieces, but I think they've got the goals to prevent them coming below an Everton, Leicester, Watford, West. Who's the other team? Leicester, Everton, and West Ham. So I think they won't finish mid-table either. But with United, I'm just wondering,
I think you could finish mid-table.
You think we could?
Yeah. I'm not saying it will happen, right? Mm. But what I'm saying is there's enough teams that have good enough squads to compete with United and Arsenal. I don't necessarily think it will happen because what usually tends to happen is sometimes they get injuries or sometimes they don't perform to the level that you expect them to perform. Like Leicester started this season, hasn't really been that impressive. We beaten them the other day, right? So... Leicester's a team that I would have thought was a candidate. Like, squad for squad, looking at the squad, they could easily compete with us, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going
to
come
ahead
of us.
You've got to win those games back to back to do the job. Yeah,
they could finish mid-table. I think it's unlikely that it will happen.
Okay.
But it's very possible because squad for squad, you can't really say that they're that much better than
Leicester
the teams. And if we get a couple of injuries, then even like the squad depth is just gone. It's thin. Right, so...
Let's I wanted to get you guys' views briefly on the big story last week. She's loving this. let's talk briefly, guys. Peter Beardsley. Big story from last week. He was found guilty of racially abusing some youth team players. Ollie, one of the criticisms from people in my circles, other journalists, was how his camp handled it. And how the
Beardsley's
FA, and how the FA handled it as well. And they almost seem to be this kind of like apologetic view that they have to find the guy guilty because it's Peter Beardsley. I don't want to talk about necessarily the case itself, but just again, I'll get an answer from you all three briefly. What does football do with people like Peter Beardsley? Because it's an 8-month ban from football. Would you see him banned, period, from football? Or do you think there's a way that we can get these guys back into football, having learned their lessons?
But I, you know what, Jordan, it's a mindset in football. I think there's a mindset, there's a problem in football. This isn't just about Peter Beardsley, is it? There's a mindset there. When you look at the fact of how many black managers there are across all the teams, you know, in the Football League and the Premier League, you know, when you look at the fact that this sort of thing's been going on for so long, when you look at the fact that Beardsley, you know, he was called out for this and then they brought him back into Newcastle. Mm. They weren't interested in dealing with the situation. Mm. There's a problem there, Jordan. This isn't about Beardsley. This isn't about... Football has got a problem because football is so insular that they deal with their own. They, you know, they kind of have the... It's like a, you know, some sort of a murder goes on there where they're just kind of, you know, you don't speak about football outside of the football, you know, football walls and whatever. This sort of stuff goes on all the time. You know, Graham Ricks had problems at Chelsea. You know, all of these people are in the game or allowed to get away with stuff and they're allowed to do it because they're in the football game and people don't want to say anything because it's Peter Beardsley. You can't say anything against him. So he can say what he likes. And this needs to stop. You know, they need to do something
about
the
governance.
But it's about governance. But this is right at the top. It's not about individuals. It's not about... There's a problem in football. There's a problem in dealing with race. race in football.
I agree.
And I just, you know, I think that people like Beardsley, there needs to be strong punishment. There needs to be strong punishment of, you do this, yeah, you're out of the game. It's not like, oh, well, we'll give you a couple of months out and you'll be, you know, and if you don't,
So let me press you then. So if you were in charge of the FA right now, Beardsley's got his 8-month ban, would you set a precedent now that says, if you are found guilty of racially abusing another player, any of your youth team, whatever, you're done in football?
Let's think about this, Jordan. Let's think about this, right? If you're in any other walk of life, yeah, and you do something like what Beardsley was doing, mm-hmm. right? You've got a duty of care. You're dealing with young people. You've got a duty of care, right? Mm-hmm. You can't just go into an environment like that and abuse young people who basically you're supposed to be safeguarding them. You're supposed to be looking after them as well as managing them. These are young people. These aren't like senior pros. Not that it would be okay if it was senior pros. These are young kids he's been talking to like that. If you went into any other walk, imagine you're a teacher, Jordan. You're a teacher and you...
Which he kind of is.
Well, that's what I mean. That's what I mean. You're a teacher. You speak to a young kid like that, and you say stuff like that as a teacher. Would you expect like you would get an 8-month ban, and you'd be back in the game after 8 months? Mm. You'd be finished. Mm. So you know, there's no way that you can look at it and say, "Well, actually, yeah, let's give him an 8-month ban, give him some education, and he'll be all right." Mm. That's nonsense. The guy has committed some. You know, he has gone way beyond you don't need to be educated to know that you can't say those things. He's got away with it because he's Peter Beardsley. It hurts me because I mentioned him earlier saying I remember watching, you know, that Liverpool front line with him and Aldridge and Barnes and think, wow, you know, how can you say that? How can you, and apparently some of these players, John Barnes or whatever, have all kind of given him character references.
Let me just, on that, does that then, is that problematic then for black people? Because if we can't even get justice from the top, from the FA, have we got no chance if black people within the game are endorsing people like Peter Beardsley?
Well, the thing is,
And just to be clear, sorry, was it character references or did he mention them as people he'd worked with and had no problem?
Allegedly, a few people...
They came forward to give... Yeah. Okay.
Even, I mean, someone mentioned Andy Cole, which really surprises me, because he's always been quite outspoken. Yeah. But I just don't think the character reference needs to come into it. I just don't think even for judgment or assessment over whether you think he's a racist outside of this... It's not relevant. And like it was like the FA were literally apologising. So, you know, Peter Beardsley's done this and that, and you know, and we don't think he's a racist, but he's done this, so we have to punish him. It's like the shortest bit was about the punishment. Everything else is about defending. But yeah, back to what you were saying. It's not good. It's difficult because I don't know, because if you had a friend who did something like that and they came to ask you for a reference, and it's they're not the first ones. Ashley Cole's done it for John Terry, you know what I mean? So I'm not gonna bash them. I'm gonna bash the people who actually would take that into consideration and kind of put that down as a rationale to say that doesn't make what.
But
isn't
that problematic though? Because as black men, even if they are friends with him, even if their experiences of Peter Beardsley were all positive, if you know that he's going to be trialed for racially abusing young black players, do you kind of have to bypass your friendship with that guy?
Well, listen,
and it's hard, I accept.
George, everyone's got different ethics. I can't tell Andy Cole what to do. I was desperately disappointed when I heard that he did that, but that's him, and I guess he has his reasons. I wouldn't do it personally, you know, but I can't, you know, without him sitting here and telling me why he felt that was appropriate to do, if he did it as well, with speculation.
Well, I suppose, listen, if a friend comes to you and he said, look, his you know, defence is he never said those things and he never did it. So if you says, well, you know, I never said that, or I didn't do that, then
you've got to take him at face value.
Those people might think, well, I know you and I know that you're not racist, so I'm gonna give you the benefit of the doubt.
I'm not sure about that.
You're not having that?
No.
Why not?
Because I think that's just a culture thing which is problematic, because I kinda look at it and think, if someone said to me, I'd be like, right, I know you, I don't really think you're like that. But then I'll also look at it and think, but why would they lie? So I'm saying,
you just withdraw yourself,
I'm not getting involved. Or I'll go and find them kids and find out what happened. Because being in the football world, like, I don't want to speak for certain people or whatever, but I'm pretty sure they understand the sort of culture that football has. So I don't think
so
it was.
Be shocked if
I don't think people yeah. was would. I wasn't particularly shocked when I heard the story. Not because I think Peter Bears is racist, but I think racism is quite it's a real problem in football. I think football is institutionally racist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Simple as.
Yeah. And the problem is, if he thinks it's all right saying it kind of in the coaching, he probably has said it. Like, he might have said it to Andy Cole in training one day or something like that. Just for example, I can't believe it's something that he's just picked up in the last 18 months or something.
Mm. But look, we were just talking earlier about the Bernardo Silva and Mendy thing.
Mm.
Right? Like, at the end of the day, like, sometimes we enable this behaviour. Like, we enable it because we let certain people make certain jokes and we think it's banter. But even if you don't think it's, like, personally, I'm not offended by everything that people say, but I'm still going to check you and say, bro, don't say that, because somebody else might be offended. And look, this is the context of the situation that you're saying. Like, I think we enable too much behaviour that we don't need to enable.
That's Bernardo Silva thing is just ridiculous, because the thing is, you know, if you're such good friends and you want to do that, dude, why are you doing it publicly? why are you putting that out publicly? It's just madness. I just think, well, yeah, you know, personally, I wouldn't be sending it anyway. But the point is, he's done that publicly as well.
Yeah. But he done that publicly because he thinks it's okay.
It's okay.
And he only thinks it's okay.
Yeah. I know that. But the point is, it's like, that's just madness. That's a madness that the guy thinks he can put that out publicly and it's okay.
Is it? Are you sure? You think that's mad? I don't think it's mad, you know?
I don't either.
No. I think it's mad. I think it's mad that in this day and age, you've got footballers who don't get it. You know, I did a game yesterday. I did a game in Italy. Yeah. I was doing highlights for a game in Italy yesterday. And a player playing for Fiorentina, he basically went to the referee and said they've been racially abusing me. And you could see that the referee was just like...
He didn't want to do anything about it.
He just wanted to get on with the game. Mm. And you're just thinking, the ref should be... He told the player, Dalbert, to go to the line and tell his official to get them to put a tan on. You think, you're the ref. You should go over there. Once you get the word that's going on...
You've got to deal with it.
You've got to deal with it. But he's just like, oh, just go over there and hurry up because we want to get on with the game.
Mm.
That's what we're dealing with. That's what we're dealing with here.
Let's just move on to our final point, guys. Let's try and get this quickly. Madison and Ali. Oh, so let's start with Madison at Leicester. What's going on there, Ollie? Because Southgate's not having him. And I can only imagine it's one of two things. He's not selected him yet, amongst all the hype that he should have selected him. It's either because he feels, going back to our discussion earlier on about players having roles, there's no designated number 10 role in Southgate's setup. So therefore, no matter how good you are, I can't get you in my system. Or do you think it's a thing of he smells a rat? And he senses a slight attitude problem with Madison that he's not liking.
I think it's the latter. I think there's something he's not quite sure about with him. He's got a touch of the David Beckhams about him, hasn't he? You know, Madison. I told you that thing of, you know, a couple of months ago over the car. Yeah. I just knew it was him. Yeah. I knew the minute I saw that car, I was like... I just know that's going to be Madison's car. Do you know what I mean? It didn't surprise me. It's just all a bit bling. You know what I mean? And listen, that's not a problem. You know, if he wants to live that way, that's fine. Yeah. As long as he's delivering on the pitch, who's he hurting? But the point is, some managers just don't like that. And some managers can see that kind of thing a mile off and think, you know, you're not for me because, you know, Southgate's trying to affect a kind of collegiate spirit there in the squad. He wants everyone pulling in the same direction.
He doesn't want any superstars.
He wants everyone who's all prepared to muck in. And maybe he feels that Madison's got a bit of the sort of, you know, a bit kind of thievish mentality, yeah.
And Ollie mentions there, Josh, that it could be problematic. I've also noticed the fact of how he's reported.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that he has his Louis Vuitton bag and he has his fancy car
and
he's a little bit, I'm hearing words of the weekend on certain radio stations and certain TV programs that he's confident and he's, you know, he's got a bit about him or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm thinking of a certain football player in the Premier League at your club when it was happening to him. Those weren't the same words they were using to describe him.
Yeah.
So I find it very convenient that when someone exerts a little bit of confidence, for one person, it's a good thing. For another person, they should be shot in the head.
Yeah. Right. Whoa. That's a bit harsh. That's a bit harsh. Even with like Memphis Depay and like other places. But anyway, like Madison. Do you know what it is, right? I think Ole... I think Ollie hit the nail on the head. And one of the things that I've heard about him, and which is why I wasn't sure about whether United should sign him or not, was that apparently it's not just about the bling. He's a bit of a... what can I say?
Gallist, say it.
No, not gallist. he's a bit of a prick. apparently he's like one of those guys that you would expect that you would hear a story that a footballer punched up someone in the club, and it would be Madison. Like, apparently, that's kind of how he is. Like, he's very full of himself.
Allegedly.
Apparently, this is only things that you hear, rumors that you hear. So you don't know if any of it's true. And one of the things that is interesting is that I don't know whether this is a good or a bad thing. Because on one hand, I can think that, okay, Southgate's looking at it and he's thinking... He's not picking players just about their ability and what they perform on the pitch. He's also thinking about squad cohesion and like collectiveness of the squad and the togetherness and the balance of the squad's mentality, right? And I think that's a good thing. The only thing I find it's a problem, because if he's basing this not on first-hand experience with Madison himself, but based on rumours. And allegedly, he's like this, and he hasn't seen it firsthand. I think that's a bit of a problem, because I think that's unfair. And I think you need to judge people based on your experiences. I don't think there's any problem with him calling up Madison into a squad, sitting down and talking with him. Like, if he has a problem, and sitting down with him and saying, "Do you think you're a good player, but I'm hearing X, Y, Z. You know, this is what I want from you, so that you can be part of this squad." I think just writing him off and not giving him a chance, I think that's a bit of a mistake.
So do you think that maybe it is more of a positional thing then, rather than... Because if Southgate's not an idiot, and I think it would be harsh if he wasn't calling him up for the reasons that we've, you know, rumoured that we're hearing, is it... Do you think...
He has called him up.
He hasn't selected him. He just hasn't put him in the team.
Called him out once. Yeah.
And there were two games where England were comfortable, and he could have easily brought him for 10 minutes in the end of those games, and he didn't. Do you think he's good enough to change the system? Because Ali and Lingard, they're not on form right about now. Loftus-Cheek is injured, so he's running out of midfielders with that kind of attacking prowess. Do you think he has to call him up just because he might need another attacking midfielder?
I mean, if you're asking me, would I have James Maddison at number 10 or Ross Barkley in central midfield, I'd have James Maddison at number 10 every day of the week.
It's a no-brainer,
it makes sense. And if you look at it, how kind of Mason Mount's almost been fast-tracked, and he's a pretty... not the same player, but they play similarly positionally. You know what I mean? Mason Mount's best position, allegedly, comes back to what you said about young players earlier, but his best allegedly is number 10. He's been put on the wing now to accommodate, and he's doing quite well. But then Madison's played from the wing sometimes as well, you know, and he hasn't had his chance for England.
Madison's played centre mid at Leicester in the free.
Yeah, he has.
So, in fact, Madison as a centre mid versus... I just don't want Barkley.
But is there a work rate issue? So maybe because Barkley, for all of his flaws, he does work hard.
At what?
Wow. Wait, are you saying Madison doesn't work hard on the pitch?
I think I'm saying that Ross Barkley, for a lot of his flaws, and I think we see his flaws, works very hard.
Have you seen Madison not work hard on the pitch?
No, but I think Barkley's work rate, I would say, is higher.
I see
him getting across and chasing things down more than Madison.
Okay.
Not to say that Madison doesn't chase, but I'm just thinking of the reasons why he does prefer Barkley to Madison.
But the thing is, if
his work rate, could that be that reason?
If you've never put him in the team, how do you know? You know what I mean? He might be so desperate to play for England that he runs here, there and everywhere. You just don't know, do you?
True that. And Ali, your mate, Ollie, let's just wrap up. What is going on there, man?
It's hard to say. He's never playing, is he? So I've no idea. I mean, you know, he hasn't really played since the Champions League final. So, you know, he had a game in Greece, but yeah, he's I mean, it's a strange one, that Greece game, the Olympiacos game, because Pochettino decided to bring back a load of players who were all coming back from injury, which is a strange way to approach your first game in the Champions League, you know? To bring him in and Ndombele, who'd been out with injury, and then play Sanchez at right back, and you're thinking, are you trying to lose this game? It was crazy. So, you know, I don't really understand it, to be honest with you, but, you know, he'll get another run out, I suppose, in the Carabao Cup this week. But, yeah, to be honest with you, the Dele Alli thing, it's everything I've been saying for a long time. I just, you know, I think that he needs to do more of his game, and you can't just... it can't just be about scoring goals, or, you know, even now, he's not scoring goals. He hasn't scored a goal since January. So you're looking at it and thinking, well, what are you bringing to the team then? If you're not scoring goals, you don't really, you know, you're not really effective in the game. You might lay on a few chances. You know, I just think that he needs to develop his game. People keep telling me about, oh, Dele Alli, he's got to be played in his right position. He's got to be played here. He's got to be played there.
I don't know what his position is.
Well, not just that, though, Jordan. If you're a player, yeah, if you're a player of any sort of... his sort of age, you come through, right? You should play wherever you're asked to play. It's not a case of, oh, well, actually, you've got to play... I can only play number 10. I've got to play number 10. What have you done to deserve that position?
But you conversely, know, isn't that quite harsh? Because you're putting him somewhere, we discussed with Rashford, where he can't do that job. He's going to look bad.
Yes, but, Jordan, if you put someone in a position... where it's a luxury position, right? You're saying you're a number 10, right? Mm. You are playing in the hole. You are playing in a position where a lot of other teams aren't playing with a number 10, Jordan. Mm. Especially when you're playing against elite teams. You're basically saying to him, you're so special, you're playing at number 10. If you put that guy at number 10 and he does jack shit, you're basically going to lose more games than you win against top teams. Mm. You can't have a luxury player like that who gives you no luxury goods. You know what I mean? I'm sorry, man. Wow. It don't work.
G, just briefly, what's gone wrong with Alli? What's the future for Alli?
He's another player. He just hasn't kicked on from his high potential, or not so high potential, if you listen to Alli. I've never seen him as a number 10 per se. I've seen him almost as a... shadow, I don't know, striker. Like a second striker. Like, yeah, someone who runs beyond the striker I don't think there's a position for him at Tottenham. I really don't. I look at him and I think
you mean Pochettino's Tottenham?
Yeah, but then Pochettino's Tottenham is Tottenham, isn't it?
No, but I want to make it clear that you don't mean there's not a position for him per se. The way that Poch wants to play, there's not a position for him.
But then, Wenger, is there a position for him at Liverpool? Is there a position for him at Chelsea? Like, what he's doing or what he's good at just become a little bit outdated, and he hasn't kicked on to give himself a round again.
And that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying, George. Basically, if you're in his position, right, you should be looking at it and thinking, you know what, I could play 10, but also if I'm asked to, I could play deeper, and I could be like a Frank Lampard type player, right? I'm not going to be like, you know, I'm not like Messi or something, but I know I can affect the game and I can score goals from deep positions. That's what you should be looking at. Mm. You shouldn't be in a position where you're like,
it's
10 or nothing. Because I'm sorry, but you haven't shown enough to say that is your only role and you're going to get that. And number 10 is like, it's
a special position.
It's a special position.
Got Josh, finally.
Do you know what? It's for me, it's just down to, again, player development. This guy is not a number 10. He was never a number 10 before he first signed him. He was a centre mid. Because of the way Pochettino set his team up, he figured, like, you know, he puts Alli in this special position. Like, it's almost like the Thomas Muller position. And again, Thomas Muller has, like, disappeared on the face of the earth because that position has just become redundant. Because he wasn't the number 10, he was like this shadow striker position kind of thing, right? But he that was never what he was. He was a centre mid. And so, again, in his formative years between 18 and... what is he now? What, 22, 23?
Oh,
he
was older than that.
No. 22, 23.
Okay.
Yeah, so between those years, right, he has never actually perfected his craft at the highest level as a centre midfielder. He was on the right track at MK Dons, right? Mm. He then went to Spurs. They put him in some funny position, right?
So did the goals disguise
the goals? I always said that. He's scoring goals, but what is he actually doing? Like, he's very good at... all he was doing was making good runs and Alderweireld was finding him with long balls. And then he could do a quick flick or he could score. But actually, like, it's good that it was effective in terms of, like, getting the best for Spurs and getting results. But in terms of player development, developing him as an all-round football player, it was totally the wrong thing to do. It was totally the wrong thing to do. And now he's in the position where he needs to reinvent himself. He needs to, like, personally, I said this the other day, he needs to leave Spurs, right? Because now I agree with G. Poch has changed his system. Son is now the second striker. You ain't getting ahead of Son and Moura because they play differently.
But Moura does like, gain the team.
No, but it's true. They play differently. It's not Ali hasn't got that pace to go beyond Kane. That's what Poch is looking for. He's not, like, you're redundant now. So now you have to reinvent yourself. You need to leave Spurs if Poch is going to be there and go and figure out what position I'm going to play and develop myself. And he might even have to take a little bit of a step down. I don't know. Because he needs to, if he's a centre mid, he needs to go and play centre mid somewhere and develop his game.
I hear you. Josh, Ollie, G, cheers for coming on this week's FFP. Another reminder, check us out on, of course, all of our socials. We're also on Spotify. Give us a comment. Let us know your responses to what the boys have said this week. We'll see you next week. Peace.